Hello and welcome back to Creative Control, the entertainment podcast. I'm your host, Kenan, and thank you for joining us on today's episode. And from the Creative Control team, I'm welcoming back Greg, back-to-back episodes, which is awesome. Greg, welcome back. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Great to be here. I'm getting my quota in early, then I can go sort of AWOL for 6 months again.
But that's it. Bank some episodes with me. Yeah, absolutely. So we are here to talk about the Oscars 2024. They just happened last night or early this morning for us, really. So we wanted to kind of jump on and we're going to go through our predictions. If you didn't check out our last episode, we basically did predictions on every category for the Oscars. We gave who we thought would win the category, but also who we thought we would have preferred to win. So, you know, we'll kind of cover that and see if our favorites won or whether it was just our predictions that were correct or not. We'll talk about some highs and lows of the show, some of the segments we like, some of the jokes, some of the presenting, the good, the bad, and the ugly of the show, basically. So, but like I said, thank you very much for being here. And as always, you can catch our video podcast of this on YouTube and Spotify, and you can catch audio on Good Pods, Spotify, YouTube Music, Apple Podcasts, anywhere that does a podcast, we are there. And we appreciate the support. So make sure you hit that like and subscribe. And please share if you think anyone's going to enjoy listening to us talk about movies and TV and wrestling. Okay, Greg, overall, what were your thoughts on the show?
I know he got slapped, so that's already a good start, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good place to start, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah,
no grievous bodily harm.
Yeah, I mean, there were no massive surprises. And there was... you know, nothing that was like the water cooler of talk of, oh my god, did you see them get slapped at the start? Yes. There were some great little segments and there were some fun bits and there was some other bits that were interesting to this, but yeah, it was okay. It was, you know, as Oscars goes, it wasn't the most sensationalized or sort of crazy or shocking or anything. Nobody read the wrong name, nobody stretched across the stage.
Yeah, it just kind of went smoothly, didn't it? Yeah, and I think that's probably what they would have wanted compared to last year. Generally, they just wanted a fairly easygoing show. They brought back previous winners to present Oscars for the relevant categories. So what were your thoughts on that? Like bringing all like the best actors, like all five males, they're each talking about a film.
I really wanted to like it. I really wanted to like it. But in a ceremony, which is the, you know, the absolute sort of... this is the very top of blowing smoke up of, you know, sort of people's arse. It was slightly cringeworthy to watch other people, you know, blowing the smoke
gushing over somebody. Yeah,
there was, and some of the reactions. I mean, you know, Robert De Niro just looked pained and like he didn't want to be there. And some of them were nice, and there were lots of moments of people like, "Oh, thank you," and all this. But there were lots of people like, "Oh, this is just weird." And yeah, I just thought it was just a little bit sort of too sort of inbred, you know, sort of
sort
of each other's ass. It was a really nice idea. I just don't think it landed.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, it's obviously nice to have them there, but I'm just fine with like the previous year's winner coming and presenting. You know, it's kind of that, you know, passing of the torch, right? I won it last year. I'm going to present the winners for this year. But having them each talk individually about a person, it's like, one, I wondered how they kind of figured out who they're going to speak about. Did they actually watch the film that the person was in, you know, as well?
This is it. If you're just told this is the person you've got to speak about, and you draw the person like, I have never heard of this person before in my life. Or I don't know this. But so they're going, what they do is amazing. And I'm like, that's very cynical of me. And I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, but it was all very generic, wasn't it? It was all just very generic. Oh, you're great. And it's like, okay, yeah.
Thanks. I like the fact that Sam Rockwell got a Tropic of Thunder sort of like little joke in with, you know, with Robert Downey Jr. and stuff. But I don't know. I mean, there were some nice moments. I mean, I'll watch, I've forgotten his name. Ken, the last winner for best short round.
Oh, sure. Yes.
Yes. I'm terrible and I don't want to butcher his name, which would be absolutely sacrilegious on a sort of a movie sort of podcast. And I should know this, but seeing him, he was so enthusiastic and he was so really enthusiastic when RDJ won, and then RDJ completely walked past him and snubbed him, which was like,
You can't not like, I might be butchering this as well, but Ki-Hoo Kwan, he's just like someone you just want to hug when you see him, you know, he's just that kind of person.
Oh, yeah, so So it was an interesting idea. I just found it a little bit sort of, yeah, it's sort of blowing smoke up each other's asses in the night when they're already basically sort of loving themselves enough. So
yeah. So the opening monologue, there were some hits and misses. I thought it was okay, but I thought generally, like, you know, going back to RDJ about being high, it's like, really, do we need that? I thought that was pretty poor.
So disappointed. I really liked Jimmy Kimmel. I've liked him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was fat. And no one's basically sitting there every 5 minutes calling him fat and this and that. Yeah. I know I can hardly talk, but no one's doing that to him all the time. And it just seemed a really low blow. And it was just really awkward in the room. There were subtle mm-hmm. little moments, like sort of John Krasinski and Emily Blunt sort of like put hands at each other and just kind of went,
yeah, I saw, I think it was Emma Stone. She turned around to the person she was next to, my husband, and said, just prick. You could just see her
mouth. Nice.
Just like, because it was a dick move. Do you know what I mean? To kind of go there.
And I love Jimmy Kimmel, and it was really sad that, you know, he went to that. You know, the funny thing is Jimmy Kimmel, you normally can depend on for being decent and better. You know, if it was Ricky Gervais, you wouldn't give a crap. You'd expect that.
Exactly.
And it would probably be funny, but that's the worst thing, is it just wasn't funny either. There was a couple of jokes that just missed in the monologue. It was a little bit like, I'm waiting for this to be funny, and he can normally be very funny, but it just wasn't.
I just miss the old school, like Billy Crystal putting himself in all the different movies in the scenes and just having that as the opening one. That was like the best intros for me. I think probably Billy Crystal's probably one of my favorite presenters. Yeah. Those are the times I was really enjoying it. So
for sure.
A couple of key ones I liked. I did like the John Cena bit. I thought that was pretty funny. So if you haven't seen it, definitely go check that out. It was in homage to the Streaker from I think it was 50 years ago, Oscars, and John Cena comes out stage, and you can very much see him. It wasn't a case if you can't see me, you can pretty much see all of him. I've never seen
Margot Robbie look so happy. She's like,
yes, right, absolutely. There's a great bit with Danny DeVito, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Batman,
Michael Keaton.
And so Danny DeVito, Schwarzenegger on stage, both discussing how they tried to kill Batman, although different Batmans, but it's fine. It was Batman's same universe for them. Technically, it was the same Batman, just different actor. And obviously, Michael Keaton's there, and he actually had sort of like the scarf on. Under the shirt, sort of like the Bruce Wayne scarf going on, and he just gave that cold Bruce Wayne Batman stare down, and it was brilliant. And so fortunately, he was like, you son of a bitch, you know. it was a really good segment. I really liked that, and I love the performance from Ryan Gosling with I'm Just Ken. That was amazing. A complete homage again to Marilyn Monroe's stage performance, where she's in sort of like the pink dress and all the black suits. It was again him in a pink suit, all the black suits around with similar ties, very much kind of key into there. But you had all the Kens there from the movie. I just thought it was so good. And it was just like, everyone's on their feet. And Slash, exactly. Slash is there with the guitar.
Yeah, that deserved it. That was so good. That was one of the highlights of the whole thing. I also enjoyed later his little sort of pretend bickering with Emily Blunt. And that was really that was funny. That was cleverly done and stuff. So, yes,
I did enjoy that.
I really enjoyed that.
Messi, the dog from Anatomy of a Fall, there at the Oscars, which was lovely to see. There was a little segment where they had him peeing on Matt Damon's star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
I'm glad they included that. I like the little
Kimmel joke. Matt Damon thing had to be there.
Have you got more positive things to say?
Before no, I think that's pretty much it.
I want to gripe about one bit that upset me, but I don't want to end on a moan. I want it to.
I'll think of something in the meantime.
do your editing. We'll make it.
I'll imagine. Oh yeah,
I'll in the middle somewhere.
Make sure we finish on a positive note.
I was really disappointed with one segment though. I was disappointed with a couple of segments. As I said, I don't think the five people doing it was just a little bit too sort of like nepotism, sort of blowing smoke up each other's arse, incestual sort of weird thing. But I obviously didn't like some of the opening monologue, which I think was a real shame, because I like Jimmy Kimmel. But I was really disappointed with the in memorandum section. So there's a few different reasons. First of all, they rushed it, which I think is a shame. I think I know they're starting early and they've got a lot to put on and they want to, you know, show more of the dresses and more of the stuff, but, you know, just cut a few dresses and the odd, you know, 20 seconds off of a speech every now and then and just show the people who've given their life to this industry. I was absolutely disgusted that Lance Reddick's Redrick, forgotten the guy from John Wick and various other things.
John Wick, yes.
Didn't even get his photo up there. He was just in this just big wall of text at the end, as was the actor that played Paulie from the Rocky series. He was just in the wall of text. I don't think he got his image up line on. And I just think it's so sad. For a start, them two are huge. And I know lots of famous and important people have died, but it's I just think it's a shame. Secondly, I didn't like the fact that it was up somewhere with interpretive dance and a couple of people singing. And to me, for a start, as soon as they start singing, Time to Say Goodbye, I just thought of bloody Step Brothers anyway and just thought, oh God, that's not appropriate. But it became more the camera shots were all of the dancers and other performers. And it's just like, show the people who died. I want to see the clips. I want to see that. I know it's going to make me cry. I know it's going to do it, but I want that. I want to be humbled after a room full of smoke blowing up asses. I want to be humbled. I want to feel sad about amazing people like Matthew Perry and Michael Gambon dying. I want to have time to reflect on that, and I don't want to see some weird interpretive dance. I'm not against performance. There was, can't remember if it was the Emmys or whatever, where Hannah Waddington sang.
That's right. She sang.
I probably just butchered her name, but she sang during one of them, and it was beautiful and it was so good, but it wasn't all about her. And she was clearly moved. I didn't like that. It's like they're like, oh, this bit's always a bit of down and a bit boring. Let's zhuzh it up and shorten it.
Yeah.
And put a block of text. It's like, don't do that. You know, give the people the time they deserve, So
absolutely. Yeah. When you have a show that runs that long, then absolutely. Because like you say, I'd rather see 10 seconds of clips of each of those actors in their most iconic role or whatever, like two roles, and just see that and recapture that moment as opposed to, people dancing. It's just, it was a really bizarre choice.
If that was cut short to allow four extra presenters for every single one of the actor nominations to blow smoke each other, I don't care for it. It's like, for me, I'm sure some people say, they thought that was really a nice segment. But if that's one of the things they had to cut in order to make that thing, I think that's just crass. I think it's so disrespectful. I think that, anyway, so that's my moany bit.
All right. Well, we'll pick up on some stuff as we go through. So we'll just go from the top. I'll have it in the list as we have here. It was the final kind of award. Yeah, this was a really weird presentation. Al Pacino delivering the Best Picture. And he basically didn't read out the nominations and they didn't get a chance to play. He just came out. I was like, I've got the envelope here, so let's just open it. And he's like, I see Oppenheimer. And it's Oppenheimer. And it was just like a really anticlimactic moment in the show. It was really bizarre. It's that, like, you've never been to the Oscars before.
Strange. So strange.
I wonder whether he was drunk at that point.
I don't know. But it was, that was very weird. I saw a clip of it, a truncated clip originally, and I just saw him go, I see Oppenheimer. And I was like, is he saying it a different language? Is I see, like, and the winner is, or something? And I'm like, And then I saw the whole thing. I'm like, no, he's literally saying, I see Oppenheimer. But
bizarre. But Oppenheimer was Best Picture. And that was, we all kind of knew that was coming, right? There wasn't any doubt for that.
Yeah, complete. No shock.
Yeah, so we both got a point for that. Oppenheimer, Best Picture, one of seven awards for the evening. And like I say, we pretty much owe all of it. Oppenheimer, we pretty much categorized pretty much very well throughout. I think it's more the other films that kind of maybe juggled the scores around a little bit. But Best Actor in a Leading Role, Cillian Murphy, again, both felt that was coming. And and well-deserved. Probably felt, I said personally, I would have preferred Paul Giamatti to win, but no problems with Cillian winning it because it was a great performance and a great film.
Yeah, for sure. There's not much more to say than that. Yeah,
I agree. It's quite straightforward when it comes to these.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll go on to actress in a leading role. So leading actress in the leading role. So I actually wanted Sandra Hüller to win it for Anatomy of a Fall. But I predicted Emma Stone for Poor Things. You wanted Emma Stone for Poor Things, but you thought it might go to Lily Gladstone. So Emma Stone came out the winner. She seemed just as shocked as everybody else, because that was the one where it was probably the out of the top major categories, the one we probably wouldn't have known. That was the one that was kind of split the most. And that was she was really surprised.
It was my favorite reaction of the night. I was absolutely delighted. And if this is the one point that cost me the win over you, I'll take it. I don't mind the loss just for that reaction at all. She was so genuinely shocked and humbled. And
And you can tell by her speech, because it went all over the place. She was really trying to collect her thoughts, and because she'd broken her dress as well. She was like, I broke my dress. Yeah. It was when, Ryan Gosling was singing I Am Ken. She was like, Gobham was dancing. So, she just seems just such a warm, genuine person. And she was just, delighted for her.
Yeah. There was a joke earlier on where, again, not particularly funny, but Jimmy Kimmel was saying, is that an acceptance speech in your pocket, or do you just have a rectangular cock to RDJ? But there was a certain case of RDJ knew he was going to get it. There was no shock there, and a lot of them knew they were going to get it. And so it was nice to see something that was genuinely like, oh my God, it wasn't a shoe in, because Lily Gladstone really was getting much more of the buzz, and everyone's going, oh, it's going to go to her. And, as much as I think she was very good, I'm still really glad it went to Emma Thompson. So, not Emma Thompson. That's the wrong Emma.
Emma Stone.
I'd have been happy if it went to Emma Thompson. She's brilliant as well. But
Whatever she does, exactly. We'll talk about that. So, best actor in a supporting role, like we said, RDJ, it was kind of a shoe-in. And he's picked up plenty this award season, right? So, it was very much a case of last one, job done. He's gonna have his pick of his roles for the next couple of years for sure.
It is nice to see him have be at the highest point of his career, and I'm not going to repeat the really poorly sort of made joke, but it really is nice to see him at the high point of his career and and getting the Oscar sort of nomination and win is he's very deserved of it. Brilliant.
And then we are both, again, on the same page for Best Actress in a Supporting Role. Devine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. We both predicted her to win, and she did. And another one who you just really were happy that she took that home. You can see how much it meant to her.
And also to Paul Giamatti, he cried, and I thought that was so nice. It was so lovely that, he was moved by the speech as well. And
because that type of film, there's a really small cast, so the connection would have been really quite strong between them.
And she was, she was this first-time nominee, and she's picking up. And it's always nice when that happens, where first-time nominees or,
someone just kind of breaks through, breaks the mold. Yeah, absolutely. Because Emma Stone, I think...
TV before that, so...
Yeah, that's right. Because I think in the last 20 years, I think only two actresses have won it twice, and Emma Stone is one of them. And who's the other one? Is it Three Billboards? Sure.
Frances
McDermott, is it, or something?
McDermott, yeah.
Yes. So she's the only other person to win two, so close together. So, it's amazing achievements. Best animated feature film. We're both wrong on this, because ultimately we knew it was going to be between two. We knew it was going to be between Spider-Man and The Boy and the Heron. We both wanted Spider-Man. You almost went for Boy and the Heron in terms of who you thought would win it. But I think we both just thought this year that would probably clinch it. The actor who voices Miles Morales, he literally went on Twitter afterwards and was like, robbed. which he says, apologies.
He said robed, and then he corrected
him. Yeah, then he corrected it.
Robed.
Robed. how do we feel about Spider-Man missing out? Because I haven't seen The Boy and the Heron, so I haven't got that to judge. But
I mean, here's the thing. Studio Ghibli movies are so amazing. They're they're so beautifully shot. Their stories are stunning. They are, you know, it's hand-drawn animation, which is a dying thing in this day of digitalization. And I just think, you know, they're like Pixar movies. They're pretty dependable. You know you're going to get good ones. I mean, obviously, Pixar's had lesser movies recently, and, you know, they're not all at the height of, you know, I suppose their golden age. But, you know, and The Boy and the Heron isn't considered the best Ghibli, but I think, it, as I said in the predictions, I think, if anything, it would go to that because it's a recognition of all the things it hadn't before. So, and on the same argument, Spider-Man 1 with the previous Spider-Man, which kind of was the first time we saw all these different animation techniques and things and stuff. And they did more of the same. So maybe it was a case of going, well, rather than give it to this one, which is similar to the other one.
It's a good point, Aaron.
But yeah, I mean, I was happy to see it get that as well. I thought it was really good. Interestingly enough, I think, things like that would always, I think it would be more likely to get an Oscar starting next year in sort of some of the Ghibli films, because they're introducing a new category, which is sort of excellence in casting. So it's going to be a new Oscar category for putting cast together. And the cast, you know, the English cast for that, you know, English speaking cast was absolutely star studded and amazing. So, if that was existing this year, maybe it'd have been, recognized for that as well. Yeah. But
that's a really good show. I think casting one is really good. And I think stunts, you know, I think they've long gone under the radar, and they should definitely be sort of like recognized. But best adapted screenplay. We both went for the same, American Fiction, and it was the winner. So again, well deserved. We were right on the money there. Best original screenplay. We did go for different ones on then. I wanted and predicted Anatomy of a Fall, and you went for The Holdovers. I got that one. Anatomy of a Fall came out the winner. So I'll take that. But I don't think you'd seen Anatomy of a Fall, have you?
I haven't, though.
Exactly. So it's not one that's easy to comment on. But no, I thought that was very well deserving. I thought it was very well put together. It's I mentioned on the previous podcast, if you haven't seen Anatomy before, you know, it's definitely the one that you should go check out. Best director, it was nominated for best movie, best actress in a leading role. And basically it's kind of a murder mystery. And it switches between French and English, as the two main languages of the film. But it's just so beautifully put together. It's a kind of a whodunit, but you actually don't know who's done it. The film convinces you to go in so many different directions throughout, and you keep, it's a little bit like if you're watching sort of like Making a Murderer, and you keep thinking, oh no, he's completely innocent, and they show you another bit of evidence, oh no, that means he's done it, and they show you another, oh hang on a minute, and you just keep going back and forth in the movie like that, and thought who you done it. So it's very well put together. Right, moving on. Best cinematography, it was only gonna be one, and it's Oppenheimer, right? So
yeah. Well deserved. So yeah,
there's not much to say about that. Okay, best costume design. So we were both wrong on this one, and I think this was a little bit of a surprise. So best costume design, we had Barbie. We both went for should win, and we thought would win. Were you surprised by this one with the actual winner?
No, not really. I mean, I would like to have gone to Barbie. I mean, not because I was, as we discussed last time, it was, you know, sort of feeling that it was snubbed or anything like that. But I just think that it's something very different, So sort of say copy all these old fashion things, and also in some cases make things look cheap and plastic but stylish, and it was, you know, it's quite a strange thing. So
to clarify, the best costume design winner was Poor Things. They came out on top.
But their costume was also fascinating in Poor Things. I think I mentioned that in the last one. So, you know.
Yeah, we said it would probably be close because, again, all Bella Baxter's dresses, you made a really good point of that. You know, all the different costumes they had, the suits. You know, it was kind of in a time period, but it's otherworldly in a way.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, there were some fantastic pieces towards that. And it was actually really sweet because when that award was being announced, Emma Stone was backstage chatting to some people. And she saw the wind backstage, and you see her chatting to people. She goes, I need to go because they're reading an announcement. And you see her then see the win on TV, and she's so happy for them. You can see how much of a collective it was for that group. But so that was really nice to see. But yeah, congratulations to Poor Things on Best Costume Design. Yeah. Right. So then we kind of went into a wild guest situation. So we were Best Documentary Feature Film. So if you caught the podcast, Greg pulled out an app and he got a number randomizer for his predictions because we had seen
Tiger, I think, tonight.
Let's have a look. So To Kill a Tiger was the one that you landed on. I picked 20 Days of Maripol, and I thought I got a win. So that was pure luck because, again, I haven't seen any of those.
You're a jammy sod.
I'm absolutely jammy on that.
I am not going to be creating any social media votes of things for this randomizer. It did me dirty.
It did. So. Yeah. We're not going to plug that app at all. And then no. Documentary short, I picked ABCs of Book Banning. You picked Island in Between, but the winner went to The Last Repair Shop. Again, can't comment on any of these because I haven't seen any of them. And to be honest, I'm unlikely to see these. Then we'll go to Best Film Editing. There's only going to be one winner in this. We both went with the winner, Oppenheimer. So. Yeah, it couldn't really be anything else, could it?
No, beautifully edited, so well put together.
And as we mentioned, in
cinematography, it's, you know, if you get one, you stand a fairly good chance.
Yeah, it's kind of two sides of that coin, isn't it? And like we said, you know, the editing of going back to the black and white and the color in terms of the different subject and objective parts of the story. You know, and I suppose it was cuts to, like you say, there was also cuts between present day and sort of like historic, so it's just really, really well put together. So yeah, absolutely, no question on that one. Best international feature film, we both went for The Zone of Interest, and we're both winners on that one. Absolutely well deserved. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, The Zone of Interest?
I think it's an important film to win. As I said last time, I've been to Auschwitz, and my partner, my partner at the time we were there said to me, I think everyone should come here. I think it's both terrifying and humbling and important. And I think, yeah, films like that need to be made so that we remember these things, and, you know, we have to remember them till lives aren't wasted. So, yeah, I think it was a very deserved film.
And we'll link that to Best Sound as well, because The Zone of Interest won Best Sound. I said that's the one I wanted to win, but I put Oppenheimer as I thought might be the one that takes it. But you stuck to your gun. You said, yes, it should, and I think it will, and you're absolutely right. So you beat me on that score because, yeah, the sound in this movie is incredible.
Well, I mean, it's the most important thing. You know, the rest of the time, I think there's only one shot of even vaguely inside the camp, but the rest of the time you're next door, but it's the soundscape. It's the sort of the juxtaposition of your senses, seeing one thing and hearing another, and it's so important. It's such a clever movie in that sense. It's absolutely integral to the storytelling, more so than I've ever seen in any film. So yeah, it had to win sound. So
And something I just learned today was about the making of The Zone of Interest. So the house was set up with 20 hidden cameras.
Yes.
So in each room, they had static hidden cameras and microphones in the ceilings and around. And when they were filming, so the opening part of the filming, you have the commander outside chatting to his generals. You have a hat, sort of like a maiden making a drink. You have the wife in the kitchen and the kids. All this was actually filmed at the same time. So everybody was going about doing their parts in the house. It was all filmed at the same time, all recorded sound at the same time, and then they put it together. And when I found that out, I'm like, wow, that should have probably won editing because I had no idea about how they put this together. And so when you see the audio track, he's got like these 20 different audio tracks where he's selecting all the different sounds. So there's a bit where the mother's with her mother in the bedroom and they're having a conversation when she's unpacking and the kids are playing a drum in the other room. That was happening at the same time. So then they're cutting between the two different recordings of the sound and the video. And I just thought that is such a brilliant way. And what they said is they wanted it to be like you're looking at like Ants in an Ant Farm, as opposed to focusing on character, because it wasn't necessarily about individual characters. That's why you don't have the close-ups and it's all just like all these static shots. And I see it now that it's told to me, but at the time I didn't even realize it.
Yeah, so,
incredible.
Yeah, I learned that before I watched it, and right. Yeah, it was so clever. It helped explain why there are times where it felt like part documentary or part sort of Big Brother house, and they said not like fully in Big Brother house, because you know they do more, but that they was
that fly on the wall feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's and I think that really helped. It was so clever. But as you said, if that was more well known, I guess it would arguably be a sort of contender more for editing. But yeah. I guess it's what you see. And the editing of that was as much the sound, again, trying to get the sound to balance up, you know, outside of the differing soundscapes, kind of sitting there and going, okay, we've got a drum here and do that. And it was very, very clever. But again, I think the achievement lies more in sound.
Because it wasn't a film I thought I would go back and rewatch, but now I've seen how they've made it, I actually do want to go back and rewatch it and just see that artistry kind of play out in a different way. So
I mean, it's a tough watch, so you know,
it is a tough watch
things once, you know I mean, I'll watch Schindler's List, I've seen many times, and I've watched a few things just because they're so beautifully shot and they're, you know, the music's amazing, this and that, and this is different from that while sharing some of the subject matter. But it was very, very difficult to watch in some ways, but that again stands at the soundscape that really made it. So it's what you don't see is more atrocious and horrific than what you do see. We're so desensitized nowadays to violence and gore and blood and the like, and sometimes just hearing this, and it's, to me, it's more harrowing watching people be jolly and be friendly. It's easy to paint every sort of person as a monster. It's watching them just be family people,
normal,
slaughtering families, and that is where you sit there and go, oh my god, that's so horrific. So
yeah absolutely. So then the next category, best makeup and hairstyling, you got another win over me here. So I went for Maestro. I thought that was going to take it home. But yeah, Poor Things, best makeup and hairstyling. So, and I didn't have any issues with that because, again, it was very, very well done.
I think it was, it was not just a mixture of, you know, sort of Bella Baxter's and things makeup. It was, you know, the prosthetics Willem Dafoe was wearing. It was so many different parts. So, I think, you know, what they did to Bradley Cooper was impressive, but it wasn't enough, I think, in the end to win over. Thing, so I'm glad they got it.
Agreed. Best original score, again, Oppenheimer. We both went for it, both got a point. It was, because we said it was a kind of a lack of familiarity with a lot of the scores, because there's, again, scores aren't what they were, you know, a lot of scores back in the day in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, there were scores which you'd come out of a cinema humming, you know, in theme tunes, but there wasn't a lot on there. So American Fiction, I couldn't tell you what that score was. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, again, it's something familiar, but nothing really new. Killers of the Flower Moon, I think there was a lot of maybe historic stuff in terms of the Aborigines, Native Americans, in terms of how that was kind of put into the film. And Poor Things, again, couldn't tell you what the score was. But Oppenheimer, again, it's not necessarily now about how you come out thinking of that score and sound. It's about how it captivates what's happening on the screen at the time. So it's not coming out and having a theme tune, but it's about how it makes you feel at the time. And Oppenheimer did that, I guess.
Yeah, I think sometimes some scores are more soundscapes and probably just deserve to have their award in the sound design more so than the score. You know, to me, fairly old school. I like sort of Soaring Songs, and Oppenheimer sort of really gave me the feels and put sort of arms, you know, hairs up on my arms at times and things like that. But I also, you know, some scores can be more simple and be really, really effective. But yeah, I just think it was the best by far. So
best original song, I wanted I'm Just Ken to win, and especially after that performance, but it did go to What I Was Made For, which I said I think would win, and you had that as well. So both a point for that. And it's amazing that Billie Eilish at 22 years old is a double Oscar winner.
Right. It's crazy, isn't it? Absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
So young. So She's got a way to go yet, though. She's she's got to try to get the EGOT. That's when
EGOT,
you can really brag. So,
yes, absolutely.
So I think John Legend's got an EGOT, so he's a
What does the EGOT stand for? Go on, for our listeners who don't know what an EGOT is.
So it stands for Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony. So it is the ultimate prize. Considering, especially because sort of Grammys and Tonys are different things. So you've got your music careers, you've got your acting careers, and then you've got the musical theatre career. So they're all very different. So yeah, there are a few EGOT winners, but yeah, it's I think she'll get it eventually. She's a sort of
person. See her. Yeah, her and her brother is just a partnership, right? So
yeah,
I think I can see them putting some kind of musical tool together.
But to be a double Oscar winner, that's crazy. I mean, that's already quite a small sort of group.
Yes, a small pool of talent. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah. Right. So then we move on to best production design. Best production design. So I said I thought it would be I wanted it to be Barbie, but I thought it would be Poor Things. And you went for Barbie for both. And it was Poor Things in the end, best production design. So I just kind of got out on that one. It was for me going to be between those two. Again, I wanted Barbie to win it because I think of what they created for that film was fantastic. But when it comes to the Oscars, again, I thought Barbie was going to be pretty much left out on most categories it was nominated for ultimately. But yeah, I just thought the world that they created with Poor Things was fantastic and was going to capture more of the award census kind of thing. So any issues with Poor Things winning over Barbie?
No, yeah, again, I said it was a two-horse race, and I was glad for it to really go either way. I thought the creating the multiple different types of worlds and just the fun of creating a plastic world and making the houses look realistic while making it also look plasticky and like it's someone set up a really nice little toy table. And I thought that might tip it, but I'm very glad that I'm one equally as glad that Poor Things won it. So yeah.
Yeah. So one, we actually missed out a category when we did it, which was the best animated short film. So that's one we didn't cover. I missed it off. That's my fault. But the winner was War Is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. So,
yeah, my randomizer got that. So I think you should give that one to me.
Fine. I'll give that to you.
I'm joking. No, we missed it out. But I'm trying to redeem my randomizer.
Trying to redeem the rank. Right. And then we had best visual effects. So the winner was Godzilla Minus One. That's what I wanted to win. That's what I predicted would win. You went for The Creator, which was a solid shout because we both talked about the budgets for these and how what they achieved with that. So I don't think you've seen Godzilla, have you?
I haven't, no. I really enjoyed the reaction of the people when they won Godzilla, though. They were so happy. They were...
Yes. They did a video drop when they got the nomination of them all like in this room, and they've recorded when it was announced, and they went absolutely batshit crazy, which was just delightful to see. It really. So that covers basically everything, and
Well, you might have talked about when you talk about best film, but best director.
Oh, of course, yeah, I've missed best director. Obviously, yeah, there we go. Yeah. So best director, Christopher Nolan. I think again, it was. I don't think this is Nolan's best film. But it does feel to me that it was the right film at the right time to take this award home. If Dune had been released when it was originally due to be released, it would have been in this year's Oscar contender. And I was wondering, how would that have gone then? Because the way people are raving about Dune 2, as they, you know, like loved Oppenheimer, it would have been a very different Oscars this year. But Nolan winning, it was probably the right call, don't you think?
Yeah, no, for sure. Again, even if you didn't consider it his best work, I think you just look at his collected works, and I mean that guy's just has an amazing run of films. You know, not many people have got a solid sort of discography as him. You know, sort of, he's just done generally good films. I mean, I haven't seen Tenet, and I know it's probably not his strongest, but but at no point did I hear anyone say it's bad. So yeah, he's done some amazing things. And but yeah, I'm over the moon that he got it. I think he deserved it. It's very rare for someone, the director, not to also, you know, the best picture to not get the best director.
Yes.
Sometimes it gets split down the middle, but yeah, I think he deserves it. And I was very much touched by the nice embrace between him and Steven Spielberg. I thought that was really nice. That's,
yeah,
you know, too
much. He seems a lot more relaxed than he normally does when he did his acceptance speech. And I saw a couple of the interviews afterwards, and he just seemed to be really enjoying the moment. I think it's almost one of those, the pressure's off a little bit now. You know, I think it's probably something he's wanted for such a long time, and the relief to kind of to take one home.
I guess there was no real, I mean, he don't think
he must have thought there's no real threat, right?
There's no real threat. Okay, so yeah,
I think it would only have been potentially Poor Things, because best directing we had Anatomy of a Fall, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. Zone of Interest and Poor Things were probably the ones which were going to be closest, but the way people have been feeling about Oppenheimer, yeah, he must have quite confident at least.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Okay. So there were 23 categories in all. So obviously, disregarding the couple that we missed out, I just nabbed it by 3 points.
I kind of did the math at the time watching it and going, yeah, he's going to beat me.
I just nabbed it. So 16 to 13. So I got 69%, obviously the two that we didn't get, and then you got 56%. So not a bad guess. So it was very, very close. It was always going to be the technical categories that kind of split this Oscars. And I suppose the only thing that's surprising is maybe and I'm glad it didn't, but the surprising thing is probably that Oppenheimer didn't win more than it could have. And I think that's a positive, really, because there were some other quality films in the last year.
Yeah, I think if it gets to the point that something just completely sweeps everything and it's just a presumption that it will win everything because it's got the big ones, I think that's a shame. It didn't have the best production design compared to Barbie or Poor Things, and so I'm glad it didn't win that. It certainly didn't have the best sound design, in my opinion, even though it had a very close second. I think that the film was absolutely integral, that, you know, the film where the sound was integral to the plot won it. So I'm, you know, I don't mind losing. There wasn't a single thing there that I didn't want to win that I thought, okay, that's shocking.
Yeah, there was no upset.
I think everything that what I thought was going to win, I think the thing that won was on my, you know, I'd like to see win. Or I think I've said in almost all of them, I don't mind it winning, with very few exceptions, like Godzilla, which I haven't seen.
Yeah.
So it probably been deserved of the visual effects. So.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, if you look back over the last few years, there's always a few categories which you look at and think, that person shouldn't have won, that person shouldn't have won, this person should definitely have taken that home. I don't get that sense this year. It's one of the rare years I feel like the Academy's pretty much got it spot on every category. And so it's like, as much as it makes it uneventful from watching it, it's the right thing because the right people won it. So if you've got nothing to complain about, then it's a good outcome, right?
I mean, these things are subjective, and, you know, what we like might not be what someone else likes, but that's the whole idea of an Academy voting is, you know, between them, they generally sort of become, you know, revert to the mean as such. So I think they got it right. There wasn't anything there was nothing that felt overly political voted. Yes. I didn't feel anything won because there was some sort of ulterior motive or I was obliged to win. I'm glad that Barbie didn't win more than it was meant to win. I love Ryan Gosling and his performance, you know, the thing. I think it was one of the highlights, if not the highlight of the whole show, but he didn't deserve to win as Ken, nor did America Ferrera as her sort of nominee either. I think that there wasn't anything overly political. I think the best things won and deservedly so. So,
yeah. And a good point made by Jimmy Kimmel, obviously he raised it in the intro that Greta Gerwig, you know, controversially, you know, snubbed for best director. But and then everyone was like applauding that. And he's like, well, that was all down to you guys. It's like it's nobody else's fault but the Academy, because she didn't get put forward.
But I mean, and this is what I mentioned in the last episode, is I'm not saying she's snubbed, but if she had been nominated, it might have encouraged more people, more females to enter into the industry. It is a male-dominated industry, and I'd like to see that change. I think females have a very powerful and important voice that we need to hear. And, you know, if a male had made Barbie, I don't care if they'd made the exact same film, they would have been a little bit, it would have kind of been very ironic after everything. Yes. And it would be very mansplaining. Although I love the joke with Emily Blunt about being Kensplained by Ryan Gosling. I think that's the only reason that, even if it was a little political thing, I wouldn't have minded her being in there to inspire a new generation of female.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But they didn't do it for the sake of it. And again, I'm glad of that. I don't want it to be sort of, you know, bribed and blackmailed and things like that. The year that a very sort of huge Oscar campaign shove and stuff like that meant that Shakespeare in Love won over Saving Private Ryan is just absolutely atrocious. And this is all down to, you know, Harvey Weinstein sort of like buttering the right people and really pushing for it. And it was just shocking. It is. I mean, I love Shakespeare in Love. I think it's a guilty pleasure. I love Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's a fun film, but it's not better than one of the most realistic and gritty depictions of war ever made. And yeah, not in a million years. So yeah, I'm glad there was none of that, because I mean, it does make for an interesting sort of, you know, few months afterwards where people sit there, you know, the water cooler talk, you know, Chris Rock's getting slapped and so-and-so winning and then reading the wrong thing and everything else in between. But yeah, no, it was a non-eventful one. Maybe they're going to wait 4 years and then go out for a bang with the centenary.
Yeah, 100 could that could be quite something. Actually, one thing I wanted to shout out, which I think was really good. So Cord Jefferson, when he took his acceptance speech for American Fiction, you know, he basically said this. He said, "I understand there's a risk averse industry." He said, "$200 million movies are also a risk. Instead of making one $200 million, try making 10 $20 million movies or 54 million movies. The next more Martin Scorsese is out there. The next Greta's out there. The next Christopher Nolan is out there." And I think that was a really great point that he made. It's like, we don't need these huge budget movies to be good movies. You know, it's like, it seems like you have to spend money to make money. It's like, no, that's not the case. Like Godzilla Minus One, like I said, a budget of 10 to 12 million, and it did fantastic. The box office, fantastic special effects. And we can have these more grounded movies. You know, if you look at like The Flash, Mission Impossible, they're like 290, 300 million for a movie. Gladiator 2 apparently is going north of 350 million in its budget. And it's just like, where is that money going? Because you don't see it on the screen. It doesn't compute in that way.
I agree. I think.
So I thought that was a really great sentiment that he put there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, some of the, if you look at my, not that I've got a list to hand, but if you look at my top 10 movies, there's probably not a single movie in there that was, you know, even close to 100 million. I don't get me wrong, I love the Marvel films, I love the Star Wars films. I disagreed with Coppola and Scorsese when they said they're just theme attractions. And, you know, when I sit there and think that, you know, an Endgame or an Infinity War are amazing and equal or good entertainment, but, you know, none of those are in my top 10, and certainly Francis Ford Coppola is at least once. So it is a case of, yeah, I just think that they don't have to be mutually exclusive. You can sit there and go, we can occasionally stop putting a $200 million to something and make lots of smaller films and take some chances, because, you know, there's less of a gamble. And people are getting superhero fatigue. And you know, I don't want to see the end of it, but I'd rather see some more quality movies. I'd rather see a occasional superhero movie that does small budget but thinks more about the plot and does something very different. So yeah, I agree. I'd like to see some better movies that are smaller budgets, because I think that, as you said, that's, or as the guy said, that's where you'll find the next lot of sort of auteurs, people who know their job. So
yeah, no, absolutely. You want to see the next generations being given those opportunities, because right now, so many of the, you know, we know things are tight at the moment. We know that a lot of the studios are struggling financially. A lot of films aren't making a lot of money at the box office. There is losses on some films. But yeah, if you're putting 100 million into a film and making a loss, that's something. If you're only putting 5 to 10 million into a movie and making a loss, it's not such a big loss. You know, you are likely to kind of recoup something of that when you release a film worldwide, regardless. You know, it should make some money somewhere. But yeah, we just hope the filmmakers get a chance and it isn't all about, because it seems like at the moment, if you want to make that type of thing, then you have to go to a streaming service and it's not going to have a cinema release. So those lower budgets just tend to be coming on a streaming platform.
But then that's a discussion of, you know, for another time of, you know, is cinema slowly dying out? Is, you know, the streaming services are their own studios now. They're cutting out the middleman. And, you know, sometimes, you know, stuff like The Irishman, you wouldn't have been able to make for a cinema. There would have been a studio going, no, it's way too long. You have to cut it down. Mm. Although the average in length of things, I think it's gone up like by 30 minutes in the last like 10 years or something. So the movies are just longer now, and that's cinematic release. That's before you start talking about sort of like Netflix and the like. But yeah, it's...
Yeah.
I think that, you know, we're changing the way that we sort of digest these things nowadays. But I also think that if you aren't only doing big budget movies, you're never going to be daring to stray too far from the proven formula. And that's when you just end up with, you know, generic fare. And no wonder these things are, you know, as much as, you know, the superhero movies are becoming similar, and, you know, it all ends in a big sort of a sky laser and a big boss fight, and it's all the same. But early on, you know, they, you know, people like Kevin Feige said, well, let's use some directors that you wouldn't think they're just out there, you know, Taika Waititi and all of that, and you get some of the best films. So you need, but that side, you need to go away from the formula to find, you know, some of the best films. And that's why that's where you're going to get your zone of interest. That's where you're going to get your Parasites and all these amazing films and stuff like that, is when you just kind of go, we can be daring because we don't have to worry about recouping a multiple $100 million budget. So I think that's where you're going to get to the best movie. So I hope they can do both without feeling that one has to sort of completely trump the other.
Yeah, no, it's a really good show. Yeah, no, good conversation for another time. Cinema versus the streaming services and kind of where we're headed. Yeah, it's a really good point, because I do have Chris, who's a teacher friend of ours. He did our Warhammer episode. And, you know, he talks a lot about, because obviously he's teaching kids and how they consume content. And it's a really interesting to hear some of the points that he makes about that, because he hears and sees things that I'm just not privy to. So, yeah, definitely really good chat for another podcast. Greg, is there anything else you wanted?
No.
Yes. Was there anything else that you wanted to cover today? Anything else you wanted to chat about?
No, I think that's about it. It was a fun sort of Oscars. No major upsets, no major shocks. But I think sometimes you need that, really. I'm getting old. It can't always be an Oscars slap and this and that. It's just like, you know, for every weekend where I have a wild one, I need free where I'm just chilling now and, you know, catching up some TV and just playing video games and just chilling. I'm just getting too old for this shit. So yeah. I'm glad it was non-eventful. You know, have a couple of those and then we'll have a big blowout for the sort of centenary, and we can.
That's right. It's going to be interesting couple of years. Yeah, it's going to be interesting couple of years, because there's not a huge amount of major releases in 2024. And I think, because of that, something like Dune might sweep up very much next year, you know, depending on what we kind of see later on this year. But the year after that, we have a bit more of a return to the blockbusters. We're going to have Superman, we're going to have The Batman, we're going to have Fantastic Four, and we're going to have a lot more of these movies. I'm just wondering how that's going to shift the dynamic again when it comes to Oscars, because will some of those smaller films still get the opportunities, or is it going to be a battle of those bigger films at the Oscars? I can't see it. But
I can't see it. I mean, next year I think is going to be really interesting. This year we had these amazing films, you know, for things like Maestro to not get anything, and we kept on saying, Paul Bradley, 7 years of his life he's put into this,
bless him,
bled for this film, and he just picks the wrong year. He could have delayed it, rushed it and brought it out a year earlier, or delayed it by a year. I mean, next year, because he'd have done all the work, next year it's going to be the year after there was 140 something days of writer's strike. So he'll
that's right.
But yeah, so yeah, I think next year will be slimmer pickings and could be interesting, but we'll see.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Greg. Really appreciate it. And thank you very much to our watchers and listeners. Let us know what you thought about the Oscars. Did the right people win? Were there any shocks for you guys in particular? Or who are some of the contenders that you would like to have seen take some of those big prizes home instead of the ones that did? As always, you can see our video podcast on Spotify and YouTube. And for the audio version, you can get it on any podcast platform out there, pretty much. So that's it. So until next time, thank you very much and peace out.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
This is the way.
This is the way.
I'm going to make them an offer again with
you. Dead or alive, you are coming with me.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Were you rushing or were you dragging?
That's what she said.
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great.
Thank you.
What is that?
Say my name. I am the father.
Oh, chills. Literal chills.
It was number 5. Number 5 killed my brother.
Oh my God, I forgot about that part.